Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. This Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast or a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, NHK Japan, Radio Havana Cuba, and Russia's Sputnik Radio. We will begin with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. The United Kingdom is no longer a member of the European Union after a long saga of delays and political grandstanding. Much is uncertain about the practical consequences, but the possible exit of Scotland from the UK is a likely battle looming up this coming year. The United States announced tariffs on a range of goods from the European Union, and Bitcoin continues to rapidly grow in value as Western currencies teeter. Then a series of brief reports on COVID spreading at faster rates in Europe and vaccine news from around the globe. There will be controversies over the rights of those who have been vaccinated and those who have not, with possible two-tier societies. Then brief reports from Peru, Syria, Yemen, and Argentina. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
Here in Europe, the United Kingdom will leave the EU's custom union and single market at midnight, Central European time, finally bringing an end to the membership of the European Union. The UK will then trade goods with the 27 member bloc under a new treaty agreed with Brussels last week. Britain's departure brings down the curtain on nearly 5 decades of EU membership.
Well, to talk about what more could lie over that horizon, I'm joined by longtime Brexit watcher and political analyst John Worth. What kind of relationship is the UK going to have with the EU in the future? And Boris Johnson seems pretty certain it's going to be a close one.
Well, it's inevitably got to be a relatively close one, simply due to Britain's geographic proximity to the rest of the European Union, and not least with Ireland on one side and France on the other side. There's going to be some extra friction in the relationship, particularly economically, between Britain and the rest of the European Union, new customs procedures and greater barriers to trade. But we don't quite know exactly how all of those systems are all going to work from tomorrow onwards. There's great insecurity among businesses to try to work that out just now.
Yeah, one of the big criticisms of the deal is that it says almost nothing about trade in services. Why is that when the vast majority of Britain's trade with the EU is in services?
That's the big part of the deal which is essentially missing for the UK. But ultimately, that's because Boris Johnson, in negotiating this deal, essentially had very defensive interests and the interests that were essentially political and rather than economic. He essentially wanted Britain, that famous phrase, to take back control, and he took that to mean take back control politically. And if you start from that point, it's inevitable you're going to end up with some greater hit to your economy and particularly to service industries. So those are going to be the fights for the next few months are going to be on what terms can the banks in the City of London, for example, still sell their financial products into the European Union. At the moment, we don't know the answer to that.
Well, then, of course, there is the issue of the future of the union itself. And Brexit has bolstered the independence movement in Scotland. How concerned are people in Britain about this?
This is an issue which has been rising up the political agenda, but there is a great degree of denial. There is a Scottish parliamentary election scheduled for May 2021. The danger is that Scotland could be on a track towards leaving the UK with a new referendum on that question, perhaps by the end of this year or end of 2021. Or into 2022. But there is very little in the way of offer to Scotland from the Westminster political establishment at the moment. And if you look at the opinion polls, there's now a solid majority of Scots who would be in favour of leaving the UK and then with the aim of rejoining the European Union. So the very future of the United Kingdom is open to some question just at the moment.
The US says it will increase tariffs on a range of goods, including wines from the EU. It's the latest development in a 16-year battle over subsidies paid by the two sides to Boeing and Airbus. Further charges are being placed on airplane parts as well as brandies from France and Germany.
Bitcoin has surged to a new record high of almost $29,000. The value of the cryptocurrency has quadrupled this year as investors hedge against U.S. dollar weakness and risk of inflation. The U.K. has reported over 40,000 new coronavirus cases, setting a new daily record. A more contagious variant of the virus has been increasing infection rates. Israel has entered its third national lockdown. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says it will last 2 weeks, but may be extended if infection rates don't fall. Moscow has started offering the Russian Sputnik V vaccine to people over 60. Previously, it was only being offered to people between 18 and 60, as it's still in late testing.
Belarus and Argentina have become the first countries outside Russia to launch mass vaccination campaigns using the Sputnik V vaccine. The shot still has not completed late-stage trials to ensure its safety and efficacy. Thailand is offering two-year work permits to undocumented migrant workers. The government hopes the move will help curb the spread of COVID-19 by encouraging migrants to access testing and healthcare. And the EU has called for the immediate release of a Chinese citizen journalist who's been jailed for reporting on the early outbreak of the pandemic in Wuhan. Zhang Zhan was handed a four-year sentence on Monday.
The U.S. has reported its first known case of the more contagious variant that has been spreading in the U.K. Officials are investigating how the new strain reached the U.S. India and the UAE have also reported cases of the variant. Venezuela has signed a contract with Russia for its Sputnik V vaccine. Officials say they will inoculate 10 million people in a first phase. Argentina is beginning to vaccinate its citizens after taking delivery of the Sputnik V vaccine last week.
In the United States, more than 3,900 people died from COVID-19 on Wednesday. That's a new record for daily fatalities, and that's according to the latest account by Johns Hopkins University. China has approved its first coronavirus vaccine for conditional use. The drug was developed by an affiliate of state-backed pharma company Sinopharm, which says the vaccine is around 80% effective. And Ireland has announced a tightened lockdown that will remain in place for at least 1 month. Social gatherings are prohibited and all non-essential shops will be closed.
Well, there's bleak news here in Germany, too, where the top infectious diseases institute has reported a record number of deaths. For the first time, more than 1,000 people have died with COVID in a single 24-hour period. Meanwhile, Germany is gradually rolling out its vaccination campaign, but a dispute is brewing over the implications for a society divided by those who've already had the jab and those who have not.
Huge hopes are being invested in this little jab. The hope of life returning to normal before fear and masks and social distancing. But reality looks very different. The vaccination campaign has only just begun and it will be months before anyone's guard can be let down. We don't want to split our society, and at this point, when not everyone can get vaccinated, and when it's not even clear whether vaccinated people might still spread the virus, there can't be any special rights for immunized people. So lange darf es keine Sonderrechte für geimpfte Personen geben. That may be so, but divisions may crack open in Germany nonetheless. Restaurants have a right to throw out unwelcome guests. Businesses can decide who to employ. It's their right. Of course they can say, that's somebody who's a bigger danger because they haven't been vaccinated, so we want to limit our risk. Will Germany become a two-tier society? Airlines that only admit vaccinated passengers? Pubs which refuse entry to the unimmunized? How long does the vaccination work for? But otherwise, I'm in favor of people who've been vaccinated having advantages. Things should be the same for both groups. as long as it's possible that vaccinated people might still be contagious. There are people who can't be vaccinated for some reason, but there are also people who don't want it. Should I be considerate about them? The position of the German government is clear. No discrimination between those vaccinated and those not. And if necessary, that will be written into law.
Two protesters were killed in clashes with police in Peru during demonstrations against a new law raising the income of agricultural workers. Under the new legislation, farm laborers will still earn less than $14 a day. Syria's state news agency says at least 28 people have been killed in an attack on a bus. Militants ambushed the vehicle on a highway about 50 kilometers southwest of the city of Deir al-Zor. Unconfirmed reports say the bus was carrying Syrian soldiers. At least 22 people have been killed and dozens wounded in an attack at Aden Airport in Yemen. The blast went off just as members of a new unity government returned from Saudi Arabia. So far, no group has claimed responsibility. The original blast was followed by another explosion near the presidential palace several hours later.
The Argentinian Senate has approved a law legalizing abortion in a historic vote. The new legislation permits abortions until the 14th week of pregnancy, or after that time in cases of rape or danger to the mother's life. The landmark bill succeeded despite strong opposition from religious communities and leaders, including Pope Francis.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com. Next, NHK World Radio Japan. Trump signed a bill saying that Chinese interference in the Dalai Lama's succession would be deemed a human rights violation. China and the European Union have reached an agreement on a business investment deal, 7 years in the works. A Chinese court handed down prison terms to 12 Hong Kong demonstrators who attempted to flee to Taiwan. A Saudi court sentenced a prominent women's rights activist to more than 5 years in prison for seeking to change the political system. NHK Japan.
U.S.-China relations face further stress after Washington enacted a new law about Tibet. The legislation offers support to the Tibetan people when the time comes to choose a successor to their spiritual leader, the Dalai Lama. President Donald Trump signed the bill into law on Sunday. It says Chinese interference in the Dalai Lama's succession would be deemed a serious human rights violation, potentially leading to sanctions. The law also stipulates China will not be allowed to establish any new consulate in the United States until Washington can open its own diplomatic outpost in Tibet's main city, Lhasa.
Tibet-related issues touch on China's sovereignty and territorial integrity, and no interference by any external forces will be allowed. We urge the U.S. to stop exploiting relevant issues aimed at interfering in China's internal affairs.
Relations between the U.S. and China have soured over issues related to trade and the South China Sea. U.S. President-elect Joe Biden is expected to take a tough stance with Beijing over human rights issues in Hong Kong and the Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region.
China and the European Union have reached an agreement on a business investment deal that took 7 years to negotiate. Leaders of China and the EU held a video conference on Wednesday and agreed on a pact aimed at boosting investment between the two sides. A focal point of the discussions was the protection of workers in China. The EU says people in the Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region are being used for forced labor and urges China to improve the situation. Another sticking point was China's practice of forcing European businesses to transfer their technology in exchange for local market access. The EU says China agreed to pursue ratification of an international treaty that bans forced labor and to make improvements on the issue of forced technology transfer. The EU says the agreement is the most ambitious that China has ever clinched with a third country, but some in the bloc say China's commitments to the protection of workers fall short.
And some Europeans are also concerned that the two sides rushed to reach agreement ahead of the inauguration of Joe Biden as next U.S. president. The incoming administration is wary of closer ties between the EU and China.
A Chinese court has handed down prison terms of up to 3 years to Hong Kong citizens who were detained by China's Coast Guard during their attempt to flee to Taiwan. 12 pro-democracy activists and students were detained by China's Coast Guard in August. They were later charged with navigating in waters illegally. Most of the activists were on bail when they tried to escape after being arrested and indicted in connection with anti-government protests in Hong Kong. One of them had been arrested on suspicion of violating China's national security law for the territory. The court said all 12 suspects pleaded guilty, but the court failed to reveal details of the proceedings. Chinese prosecutors decided not to charge two teenagers who were under 18 when they were detained. They were handed over to police in Hong Kong for questioning. Families of the activists have criticized Chinese authorities for not allowing them to observe the trial. The United States, Britain, and the European Union have expressed deep concerns about the court proceedings, which they say lack transparency. A Saudi court has sentenced a prominent women's rights activist to more than 5 years in prison. Local media reported Lojain Al-Hathloul was convicted on Monday with seeking to change the Saudi political system and harming national security. She was arrested in 2018 and later charged under a broad counterterrorism law. She received a prison sentence of 5 years and 8 months, but some media outlets report a conditional release could follow. Saudi Arabia lifted its ban against women driving in 2018 and loosened certain restrictions. But international human rights groups have voiced concern over women's rights activists who've been reportedly detained by authorities.
Those reports were from NHK Radio Japan. They are now heard from 8:30 to 9 p.m. at 6155-7245 and 7445, or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. All the times I announce are for Pacific Standard Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. On to Radio Havana, Cuba. The United States is moving forward with more smart bomb sales to Saudi Arabia and allowing Raytheon to manufacture weapons overseas. Former Bolivian President Evo Morales has warned of another possible military coup in his country. Venezuelan President Maduro says Colombian mercenaries are planning attacks on his country's military. Radio Havana, Cuba.
The United States is moving forward with approving the sale of thousands of precision-guided smart bombs to Saudi Arabia, following the final days of Donald Trump in office. Bloomberg has reported that the U.S. State Department notified Congress this week that it is moving to issue a license for the sale of 7,500 air-to-ground munitions to the kingdom. According to the report, the license would allow Raytheon Technologies Corporation to directly sell its Paveway smart bombs at an estimated value of £478 million to Riyadh. The notice also suggested that Raytheon plans to expand its existing business relationship with the kingdom to include future manufacture of munitions overseas. The White House is trying to approve the license before Trump leaves office. Both Republican and Democratic lawmakers have increasingly been opposed to arms sales to Saudi Arabia, which is responsible for thousands of civilian deaths in Yemen. Trump, however, has so far vetoed a series of measures that would have blocked the sale of billions of dollars of arms to the kingdom and its regional ally, the United Arab Emirates, the UAE. Trump has repeatedly dismissed concerns over the Yemen crisis, saying that Riyadh could go spend its arms budget elsewhere. The president argued that blocking the arms sales would weaken America's global competitiveness and damage the important relationships we share with our allies and partners. Former Bolivian President Evo Morales has warned of the possibility of another military coup d'etat in the country and urged his followers to protect the current government and the process of change. During an assembly with the six federations of the Tropic of the Department of Cochabamba over the weekend, Evo Morales said that, quote, "The theme of the coup is still valid. It is an ideological, programmatic struggle. It is a cultural, social, communal, and, of course, an electoral struggle." He added that there yet has to be a debate on how to protect the policy applied by his party, the Movement Towards Socialism, or MAS, since 2006, when he became president and now being continued by the current president, Luis Arce Catacora. Morales continued, "How are we going to take care of Luis Arce or Lucho as president, David Choquehuanca, our vice president, and how to defend this process of change? We should debate deeply the new military and police doctrine. What is going to be the role of the police and the armed forces?" The former president also recalled that the then head of the armed forces, General Sergio Orellana, had tried to prevent Luis Arce from assuming the presidency days before his inauguration. But he did not have the support of some of the military men who conducted themselves, he said, very well. In an address to Venezuela's military forces, President Nicolas Maduro has revealed that Colombian mercenaries backed by President Iván Duque were planning attacks in the coming days against military units and centers in the country. Maduro said in his speech, shared on Twitter, "With funding from Iván Duque, Colombia's trained mercenaries are preparing new attacks at the end of this year against the country's military." Maduro has ordered the implementation of a plan within 24 hours to protect the country's military bases and facilities, and has called for complete information on the Colombian plot to be assembled to enhance military readiness. Maduro also declared that military drills to protect Venezuela, codenamed the Bolivarian Shield, would be held without specifying the dates and locations of the exercises. Quote, "We will mobilize the Bolivarian National Armed Forces and our people," he said, "and the new method is that we will no longer make public the dates of these exercises and the order of operations will remain secret."
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140 and from 5 p.m. to 11 at either 6000, 6060, 6100, or 6165. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could make a donation for production costs of this listener-funded program, I may be reached through the website and PayPal or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Please, if you find this program beneficial, help support my efforts. I am really grateful for donations from a listener of KGNU in Boulder, Colorado, a listener of WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana, and podcast listeners in Boulder and Baltimore. Many, many thanks to everyone who's ever donated to this program. We will conclude with Sputnik Radio. Another excerpt from Afshin Ratansi's interview with journalist John Pilger. They talk about the death of Robert Fisk, one of the few freelance international journalists who reported from the ground in Syria and in many other wars. He was disowned by many in the media after his death for going against the grain and challenging power. Russia's Sputnik Radio.
Joining me now is legendary journalist and filmmaker John Pilger, whose decades of work has exposed the truth when it comes to war, class, and neoliberalism. There is one journalist who died this year who did question Moore. People didn't always agree with him. He certainly cast doubt on the reasons for RAF bombing of Syria, on the alleged chemical weapons, chemicals atrocity in Syria. Robert Fisk.
Yeah.
Why do you think when he died, so many in the media said he was controversial?
Yeah, that's a badge of honor. I think Fisk would be lying in his grave thinking, isn't that good? They've called me controversial. My working life was worthwhile. That is an honor to be called that. Because what that means
Translated.
It's a euphemism. It means that he went against the grain. It was the view from the ground. He challenged power. He was an excellent reporter. Of course, he wasn't perfect. He was a one-man reporter. But I remember Fisk would go places. He was a reporter. He quite rightly disparaged others as being hotel reporters. He made enemies by saying that because so many are hotel reporters or they're reporters with a PC. But he was an eyewitness reporter. He would be among the crowds in Tehran or in Cairo or the country where he lived, in Lebanon. He didn't always get it right, you're right. But as a reporter, he was an extraordinary figure.
I mean, I think journalism is a great loss without him. I mean, we want more of his work. In the future, we're not going to get it. But the character assassination, did it have shades of the character assassination, just briefly, of Julian Assange, whose court date is on January the 4th, that anyone who tries to, as you say, look at the world differently, there are his comrades in the workplace, his journalist comrades, will damn him?
Well, yes. I mean, you know, I know it in my own career when I made a number of films on Cambodia that probably helped to alert the world to the suffering of the Cambodian people under the Khmer Rouge. They were highly praised as journalistic initiative and so on. But when I describe the why this happened, that it was Nixon and Kissinger and their illegal bombing of a peasant country that acted, the bombing acted as a catalyst that created this monstrous organization, the Khmer Rouge, and that their America's other adversary, which had just kicked them out of their country, Vietnam, that went to the assistance of Cambodia. I came under a barrage of attack. Seymour Hersh. Seymour Hersh, we'd be here all day describing his many triumphs in journalism. But Seymour Hersh now has, as I understand it, I may be wrong, but as I understand it, has difficulty getting his work published.
He said so. He said so on this show.
Yes. The connection between the controversial Fisk and the controversial Julian Assange is direct. Both of them very different people doing different things, but both of them went against the grain, and both of them were truth tellers. Do I expect the court to go against him? I'm not a futurist. I can't tell. I feel I'm slightly superstitious that if I make a prediction, the opposite will happen. I just hope justice will prevail, because if it goes against him, it will be one of the greatest miscarriages of justice of my lifetime.
John Pilcher, thank you.
That interview was by Afshin Ratansi from his program called Going Underground on Sputnik Radio, the current name for the Voice of Russia. It's available online at rt.com. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows. Please consider making a safe donation online through PayPal. There's a link at my website along with the podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. This shortwave report, which is now in its 24th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. This shortwave report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.